You want to be able to really understand those fields that you're involved in on a deep level, not just the surface level, but where you really go deep with it. And then when you start to record yourself talking about these things and producing some promotional content and videos and that kind of stuff or products, then you will really be poised to be able to make a dent and really help and help a lot of people.
Welcome to Juicingpreneur Radio. Firestart your own health movement. And now, your host, juice guru, Steve Prusak.
Well, welcome back to another edition of Juicingpreneur Radio. I'm your host, Steve Prusak. It's great to be with you. We've got our friend, Professor Spira. He's become such a great leader in the movement, and I've been really excited to follow his work. He carries on the work of one of my greatest mentors, Arnold Arendt, from way back in the day, and is keeping the dream alive with the work he's doing in mucus-free life. He's really starting a revolution around mucus-free eating, mucusless diet, healing system, and carrying on that work, and it's so much needed. You're going to love the work he's doing. We're going to hear about the journey he's on, the journey he continues to this day, republishing the books, annotating the books, and adding, updating them, making them work in this day and age, which has been a real blessing. His website is mucusfreelife.com, and he's doing so much work, and I've got his bio here. We're going to have it up under the show notes at juicingpreneur.com. Let's welcome to the show right now, Professor Spira.
Greetings. How you doing, Steve?
Professor Spira, thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure, a privilege. I'm excited to be here.
Well, let's dive in. How did the journey come about? Like, did you always have the entrepreneurial bug, so to say, or how does this all start for you?
So my earliest recollection of the concept of owning my own business was when I was very young. My aunt bought me a toy called My First Business. And I'm 3 or 4 years old, something like that. And I can still remember this toy. It was like in a red kind of box, and you open it up and it had some office supplies in there. And there was, you know, little like to-do lists and had some places where you could put writing utensils and just all this sort of stuff to have a little office. And I enjoyed playing business. You know, so that was something I, as an only child, and I grew up spending time. This was, I kind of split my time between my mother, who was in and out of the hospital all the time because she was very ill, and my aunt and grandmother. So when I was with my aunt and grandmother, that's when I would do a lot of this kind of play. They really supported anything like that. Just, it was this creativity along with this business interest that I had. And so I would play with them, and I would set up my little stuff on the table, my first business. And, you know, I would act like I'm writing things and selling things to them. I started a fake little ice cream truck in my living room, where I turned over a table, put covers over it, and sort of pushed it while I sang like a ice cream truck, and would sell stuff to imaginary ice cream to my grandma, you know, and would weigh things. And so that's
so cool.
Yeah. So that was always just real fun. Now, just to me, that was just a fun thing that made sense. It's like, oh, I have my own little business, you know. And later in elementary school, you know, I had trouble early on learning to read. You know, I was kind of a slow reader. My math skills were bad. And so I was made to feel pretty dumb within the type of educational system that I was a part of, you know, the public education system in the United States and Ohio. And so I always was like, not this, something's wrong. Something's wrong with this system. I felt it when I was real young. And I always kind of was a little jealous when the so-called smart kids would kind of go off. They would have these special classes or these little whatever they called it, these things where they would leave and go and have this fun and then come back. And I'm like, well, why do they get to do that? What's so special about them? You know? And when I was in sixth grade, I entered in the what used to be called the invention convention, but it was that year the toy convention. So you actually invent a toy and put together a poster presentation and you're judged. So I invented a toy called a game called Dance Fever. And it almost reminds me of some of the stuff that's out today where with the electronic games where kids dance along and stuff like that. But basically you had a board, and that was still the cassette days back then. And so there was a cassette with music, and you would wind up shoes. It would go on to a number on the board that corresponded with the cassette number. And you would find that song and dance to it. And then your friends and family playing with you would grade you on your dancing. That was the concept that I had come up with. So I won. I got first place for entrepreneurship and first place for my game in my school, and went on to regional competitions at the Kauffman Foundation, which is promotes entrepreneurship education. And in doing that process, that was the first time I ever created a business plan. They actually took us aside and we met with some local entrepreneurs, and they taught us how to put together a business plan that we would then present to potential investors or something like that. So, and I guess I'm 11 or 12 years old, just around that sixth grade area. So I go to regional competitions. I get second runner up. Another thing that we do there that's sort of interesting with what I do on YouTube is that was the first time I really produced a serious video, like a commercial, you know, that was basically, it was kind of like a little infomercial for my product, which went along, which was also evaluated. And so after that, the Kauffman Foundation was even interested in if I wanted to go to school for business. They were talking with my parents about potentially giving me some grants and funding and scholarships and things if I wanted to go in that direction. And I ultimately didn't, in terms of formal education. I didn't go down a business realm way, but
that would have been high school. Like, you would have gone there for high school?
Well, no, like college. So even though this was before I was in high school, they, if I wanted to go to high school and then ultimately go to college and major in some kind of business related or entrepreneurial related field, they may have given me some kind of scholarship. Been earmarked already, you know, that early on, earmarked it. But my aunt specifically said she didn't want to, she's always been really good with letting me explore a lot of different things. And so I was very active in all kinds of different things in high school and in junior high, from sports to Boy Scouts, really into Boy Scouts, Order of the Arrow, number of other organizations. And so she never pressured me into one direction saying, okay, you should do this or you should do that. And so I ultimately was able to choose the direction I wanted, which was to become a professional musician. And so that's what I pursued when I went to college. But I always had that entrepreneurial kind of bug. And I also had this idea of, and had seen enough entrepreneurs talking, because I would always kind of pay attention to a lot of the infomercials, you know, the 90s infomercials back in the day. You know, I would sit there and watch and analyze the commercials. You know, I mean, what kid is sitting there analyzing infomercials? But I would sit there and analyze, you know, the emotional kind of content, the way that they present the information, the way, just, I just sort of took all that in and thought about it critically. And a few different people kind of said, well, if you really want to be on your own business, you don't have to go to college for that or major in something, you know, it's a whole different realm. And so I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense. Then I, for a short period of time, I participated in a multi-level marketing, and this was right after like senior year of high school, a multi-level marketing thing that was called Excel Communications. I don't know, it's not there anymore. But basically, you kind of like Amway for electronics. You know, getting your friends and family to get into the phones and that kind of stuff. Where they, instead of buying phone service through AT&T, they get it through you and you get the kickback. And so, so I did that for a minute and I learned a lot from doing that, but I also knew that I didn't want to, that's not the kind of business that I wanted. You know, I wanted my own business, not to sort of be a retailer kind of thing. And so, So then once I went to college, I was really focusing then on education and becoming an artist. So I was thinking a lot less of about business. And even at that time, there was a part of the spiritual journey I was on. I was thinking, well, maybe all of that interest that I have in business is just that I wasn't really supposed to do that. You know, because I kind of got so deep into practicing the Mucus's Diet and into the art there, you know. And sometimes if you're an artist, there's this idea of, which is sort of lame and not really true, but it's just more of this myth of if you're too concerned with business and it makes your art not pure and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I've fed into a little bit of that in college, you know, it's hard not to. But I also noticed that once I started to understand the music business, I was kind of like, I don't want to do the things that most musicians have to do to be able to make a living with music. I want to make the music that I want to make. I don't necessarily want to work do a lot of studio work, playing other people's stuff. I want to do my own music. Nothing wrong with that. I just, not what I wanted to do. Or tour, you know, I had the opportunity to even potentially tour with a couple pretty famous groups, but that's just not what I wanted to do. And so I started thinking more about marketing and seeing how there's so many great musicians and artists, but so many of them have no clue how to market themselves. And so they ultimately just are great musicians that remain local, local musicians, and they'll have some other job, or, you know, during the week they work someplace, and, or maybe they teach. You know, there's a lot of teachers in the, that go and get things in music, and then there's not enough performing gigs, and so they teach. And so I just didn't want to really do that, and at least not teach like on that level, on that high school level. So I stayed in school, worked to get my first master's degree, and that's when I taught then at Northern Kentucky University for 2 years. So I got that teaching. That was when I was 23 years old, and I taught for 2 years as a professor of music at Northern Kentucky. And so I learned so much doing that. Because not just about pedagogy and curriculum, but also about entrepreneurship and salesmanship, because I would always bring a bit of showmanship into my lecture process. So the students were kind of interested in my lectures. They kind of looked forward to it because I wasn't just going up there just sort of being boring and talking. You know, I always tried to have some interesting slant. But I related that in some ways to sales, you know, or into marketing. You know, I see a connection from education. And I know a lot of people, some educators, like, oh, you can't, don't think about it like that. That's, again, impure. There's all these purity tests all over the place. But to me, the best educators are actually great salesmen. You know, they're able to convey the information in a way that sticks with you. And so I really kind of honed those skills as an educator. Then came to Columbus. They were going to offer me a full-time teaching gig, and I was like, I'm not really ready for that. So I pursued my PhD, came up to Ohio State, and then went through that process, which is, anybody that's been through PhD program, you know that's the intensity of that and how that pushes you to just develop a lot of skills that would be very hard for you to develop just on your own. And went through that process. But before I graduated, I thought to myself, I instead of graduating and immediately going into teaching, which I could have, I had those opportunities were there, but I didn't want to do that. Again, I like to have my own my own freedom answered to myself and you know, my customers. So I decided to essentially take some of my student loans that I was taking out at the time and use them as business loans. So, and that is when I developed the, and I should say, you know, this whole time since I'd gotten to college and I was really getting deeper and deeper in the mucus diet and deeply studying it and wanting to put that information out into the world. And I was like, one of the reasons that nobody knows who Arnold Arad is because there has been a lack of promotion, you know, a lack of marketing in a big kind of way. And so I wanted to try to change that. And so I was like, okay. And I thought that I would maybe do some of these things later in life, because that was the one thing that I had to kind of go with the flow, because it made sense to start doing it toward the end of my school student career. But initially I had thought, well, this is something that after I do my music and tour the world doing that, I'll come back and I'll promote the diet. But it's sort of turning out to be the opposite, you know, like that. And so I spent a couple years. That's when I wrote the books and, you know, published the first books that we published and got the website going. You know, started off as arnoldarad.us when it was more just before I got serious about branding and serious about really trying to put this information out there. I just wanted to make it available. But then once I started saying, you know, I think I can really do this, I can put this information out there, there's a need for it, there's a demand that nobody's really filling in terms of transition, because nobody's talking about transition at the time. I can't think of anybody that was really talking about transition diet in a systematic way that Arnold Arad talks about it. And so I'm like, all right, there's a place for us here. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, then I just went through the process of that. Everybody that is an entrepreneur knows how hard that really is when you're trying to, because you got to try to figure everything out.
No. I mean, that's not the happily ever after right there, right? That's not like Professor Spear lived happily ever after now.
Not at all. That's like, okay, you decided to go down.
You've gone down the road less traveled.
Yeah, the road less traveled. Yeah. And so,
that's awesome. Is,
yeah. And it's interesting how little things, like I had a little consultation with someone here and there, and I had met with somebody that really was saying, you need to stop talking about Arnold Arad because he's, you know, kind of dead. Because I'm kind of historic minded. And so I like to really bring a lot of history and things. And so I get excited about historical figures more so maybe than people in the mainstream. But so there was somebody that was like, you really need to kind of stop focusing as much on Arnold Arad and promote yourself, promote your brand. And so at that time, I actually created the profspira.us, which if you go to the oldest videos, you'll see that. And so I experimented with that, but that still didn't feel right. I'm like, this still isn't really it. And that's when I created Mucus Free Life, because that made the most sense to me. We're talking about mucuslessness or being mucus free. That's kind of self-explanatory. And we're focusing on the lifestyle, not just the diet to mess around with, or not just a cleanse, but an actual lifestyle. So, okay, mucus free life. So that was sort of a way that I got a consultation, got some information from someone that said one thing, and it did make sense to maybe move away from, you know, the arnoldarad.us, that approach, because that wasn't working in the United States. That actually worked kind of well in Italy, but not here. So, the Professor Spira angle, just putting everything behind that also didn't feel right. So I just said, created a third option. which is where Nugget's Free Life came from. And that became the brand. And, you know, I kind of put, put everything under that umbrella.
So what were some of the struggles getting it off the ground? Obviously, you're balancing the music with this, but then you started to go full force into it. What were some of the challenges on the road?
A lot of the challenges are doing the research to see if you have an idea of what you want to do. And sometimes it's kind of fuzzy. It's like you can see it and you're like, OK, I think I can publish my own books. But how am I going to do it? Then you start researching. Okay, there's several different platforms that offer self-publishing. Then, okay, well, what are the requirements there? Then I say, okay, you have to have a Word document. If you have a Word document, or really a PDF that's created in Word that is properly formatted, and if that, so that's sort of the first step. So it's like these little technical things that you have to figure out. Like it becomes your business to know all of those little details, those little technical details. And when you're doing it all yourself like that, when you're starting from with no, relatively no money, I didn't have any kind of investment capital or anything like that. I'm basically just trying to leverage as many free programs as I can that I find, online. Really those first couple years, virtually no overhead, because I was trying to use as many free programs as possible. But it takes time to study all of them, to be exposed to all of the different software programs and platforms and things that you can invest in. The challenge for me there is that sometimes there's so many of them and you have to rely on reading reviews. You study and compare and contrast the different platforms. Infusionsoft, my Infusionsoft experience would be a good example of that, where it's a very, very large investment. Because once you start going down that path, you've invested some serious time and money. You can't just easily go to another platform as an example. So those were the kind of challenges for me, just finding, since I'm doing everything myself, I have to, know a little bit about web building, just enough, just enough where I might not build the whole thing, but I need to be able to speak a certain language to web developers so that I can communicate to them what it is that I actually want. And sometimes emails, you spend more time trying to write an email to a web developer as to what you want. Like, okay. And just because you might not be fluent in that language. And so it takes time to do that. And I noticed that's where you lose a lot of people when they start to see that kind of work and time has to go into it. Folks are kind of like, I don't know about that's a lot. And it's like, yeah, it is a lot, but
people don't, you're bringing back old nightmares for me now, but people don't realize how much easier it is now. The technology is evolving. It makes it a lot easier than when we first started out.
Yeah, definitely. With every passing year, it gets a little easier. Yeah. A little more refined. There's more pro software programs and platforms that come into being that facilitate these things that we want. I can think the first time when I tried to, there were some really strange apps that I originally tried to use to capture people's email addresses for a newsletter. I mean, it was something on WordPress. I don't even remember what it was, but it was it was one of those really complicated plugins that would crash the site and that kind of stuff. But that was kind of all that was really around. I think it was a little bit before MailChimp got real popular. And then I kind of went in the MailChimp direction, but they were sort of, there was a lot of, limitations there, where there were things I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to kind of automate emails and that kind of stuff. And they have that now, but they didn't then. And so that's when I made the big decision to go over to Infusionsoft, which you know, it's just such an expensive kind of thing. But at the same time, it was an important part in the development of my business, because that's when I was like, okay, I'm really taking this serious now. So I have to kind of put up or shut up with the Infusionsoft. And so
taking us back at this point, you're just getting it off the ground. What were you trying to achieve?
So I was trying to get the Mucus's Diet Healing System and Professor Arnold Arendt's name and works in front of as many people as possible, but not just indiscriminately, but people that would actually be open to checking it out and looking into the Mucus's Diet and the practice. And so I started to really look at target markets that I could, that were receptive to the Mucus's Diet at that time, and sort of have a different slant, because again, trying to find a way into the market, because that's really hard sometimes in the beginning. If there is an existing market and there's already people out there that's more popular than you, that are selling more stuff than you, then that kind of thing. So how can you differentiate yourself from them? What are you bringing to the table? And so originally I thought that I might be able to appeal to vegans. And so I donned my original slogan. Well, the original slogan was actually "Mucus Free is the Way to Be." But then I was kind of like, well, let's see if we can get some of these vegans on board. So I called Mucus Free the original vegan diet, which is true. And I wrote an article on it that kind of breaks that down. But what I found was a lot of people that were already vegans were not necessarily ready to get into the Mucus's Diet Healing System unless they were sick. So unless they had ailments they were already suffering from, there was kind of this attitude that they were already really advanced. They already don't eat meat, so they don't need to push any further. They don't need any more information there. You know, even if, you know, they have their Oreos on the weekend or whatever, they were very happy with where they're at. And so it was hard to communicate with them, but.
Well, they have their Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, right. The vegan Pop-Tarts. You know, they go to Taco Bell and get the, you know, get the vegan burritos. And so they're good. And so that was, so I was like, okay, well, I think that still works, that framing. But I noticed that at that time, there was the raw foods movement was growing, that there was a really large extremist kind of tilt to it. And what was happening was there was a lot of people that were really kind of getting swept up in the moment as things happened with fads. And so they were following a number of these different figures, and they would change their diets, but they weren't transitioning. And so I saw that, okay, this is not going to last really long. So people are going to really be really adamant and act like they're feeling great for a while. But then some of these people are going to start falling off the wagon. So I was like, let Mucus Free Life be the place to grab you when you fall. So when you fall and you had good intentions, you were trying to eat nothing but fruit or the, you know, raw fruits and vegetables and all that, you know, the whole kind of raw foods thing.
Well, depending on who you follow, because there's so many different ways to do it. You know,
yeah, exactly. Depending on who you was following, if and when you start to fall from that, we have the information. So I would try to plant seeds in some of these communities. So I became members of a lot of the different Facebook groups, and I would make comments on YouTube channels and stuff, and just sort of put myself out there in that targeted community. And that's kind of sort of what started happening, where there was, I'd get more and more people that would want to work with me or would come and read the books that were from, you know, coming from any number of different raw food programs. And they'd be like, yeah, I did it. And I felt good for, I would hear the same thing over and over again. Yeah, I did it for a while. I felt really good. But then I started feeling bad and I couldn't do this. And I started having these cravings and that kind of stuff. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad you're here. Cause what a lot of people that didn't find us, they would go all the way back to just eating a standard diet again. And it was just sort of throw at all that away. Like I was just extremist nonsense. I fell into that for a while. Now I'm back.
Right. Or they were going into paleo or raw meat.
Exactly. All the way to the other side. Yeah. The paleo raw meat, you know, Atkins type of mess. And so that's where I was like, okay, we can catch these folks and say, all right, it's cool that you wanted to be 100% raw and that you wanted, that you're incorporating more fruits and vegetables and, you know, hopefully you're juicing and that kind of stuff. But let's dial it back. Let's take a look at this transition methodology that Professor Arnold Arad put in place after working with thousands and thousands of the sickest people. He had put together a system that anybody could start and follow and make permanent changes and have a better success through a transitional approach and a systematic approach. And so that was kind of how I came into finding, finding your audience. We talk about that sometimes. Is sometimes you have to find your audience. And that's where I was able to find the initial audience, which had it did have its limitations. And so one of the challenges in that particular period, and I'm thinking about, you know, four or five years ago, is I had to frame my discussions in a way that didn't attack raw foodism, because then I would turn people off immediately. But to sort of say like, yeah, that's cool. But if things ever get bad, check out the transition methodology. You know, there's nothing wrong with transitioning. And it was actually really challenging to create a community space where people felt safe posting up a picture of some cooked mucus-free foods, because there was so much extremism. And it was like, I didn't want to just come out hardcore against it, because then I would turn a lot of those folks off. And so I had to try to find a way to transition those folks into to Arnold Arad's work, because there was so much misinformation and misunderstanding about Arad's work. A lot of people framed him as the all fruit, the fruitarian type of person, where if you actually read the mucus's diet, there's a difference in saying that the human species is a frugivorous species, but that doesn't mean that we can all just eat fruit tomorrow and that's it. You know, there was a very sophisticated transitional system that he put in place. And so that's where I've tried to lead people to that information.
I love it. I love where our worlds can come together, because I was part of that movement. I was doing the first podcast in health, Raw Vegan Radio, back in 2004. I mean, gosh, I can't even believe there were podcasts back then. And I was doing it to stay the path and meet other raw food leaders. And so you talk about someone that got to interview all those people and hear all this conflicting advice and be caught up in the whole, how raw are you? Are you 100% raw? There was this weird cult-like thing about it that I always tried to escape from or stay grounded in reality. There was a whole weird thing that went with that raw food movement. You know what I'm talking about.
Definitely. Definitely. And that's where we try. It was part of the marketing plan, and the rollout was to appeal to that, to find a way to appeal to that market, and knowing that a lot of those folks are going to start falling off the wagon, to build that into the business plan and say, okay, these folks are going to be falling off. This is going to, this is not sustainable. So it's not going to just be last indefinitely. So, but like I said, I had to kind of thread the needle in terms of how to communicate with especially a large group of people, because, you know, I have one of the things I'm most proud of with our movement and the folks that plug into Mucus Free Life is the diversity from We got, you know, diverse racial backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, political leanings. You know, we just is a lot of diversity, which can make it hard on one. You think a little bit more sensitivity and education has to be involved because what a lot of these more cult-like type of followings in these little groups afford people is the ability to not have to think so much, because if everybody is in chorus saying the same talking points and everything, then it's sort of, you know, everybody's just sort of slapping each other on the back saying, okay, you're great. You speak the language. We're all on the same page. So we would always kind of come and say it, like, okay, I acknowledge that language, but I'm purposely not going to talk like that. Like we're purposely looking at these things differently, and it forces people that are tuning in or trying to converse to change. And you actually learn, you know, I call it like the Socratic method, but you learn through that new socialization through conversation. And so that was a big part of like with the Facebook group where we would, you know, have these dialogues. And when I would have dialogues with people, that's why, you know, one of my books, I got the word dialogue in there, because I'm looking back at these old Plato Socratic method, you know, the Socrates, those dialogues, Platonic dialogues. And I was like, that's an excellent way to reason and for people to learn and to actually change the paradigm, to shift over from one way of viewing things to another way. And so that would kind of be the educational where the marketing and the sales interest met with the curricular interest of really wanting people to learn and not just parrot what I'm saying or learn what I'm doing. But it's kind of a tall order, but I really try to encourage people to learn how to think for themselves and to the age old tradition of logic, you know, the long lost art form of being able to think through things logically yourself. You know, so I'm always kind of trying to promote that, but those have been some of the challenges. Definitely is just dealing with all of these different backgrounds. And like you were talking about, people, so much conflicting information, and you get some people that are so hardcore on one thing and hardcore on another. And without civil dialogue, it just turns into arguing. And so,
well, there was also a weird thing that happens with, by the way, thank you for that. That's such a great methodology. But there was also that godlike complex that a lot of the leaders in the raw food movement, they almost like, it's my way or no way. And people followed them like sheep to the slaughter. And, but anyway, I don't want to go off on a tangent on that because I love the work you're doing. And another thing it reminded me of was like in those early episodes of Raw Vegan Radio, I was bringing in, I would play like these old commercials that were real commercials, like for these pharmaceuticals or cigarettes or just the irony of it all. And what I loved that first drew me to your work was the creativity you were bringing into your podcast and messaging with, you know, the doctor character that you play. And I'm like, wow, he's really into it. He's passionate and he's creative. He's bringing his creativity to the table. And that was something I noticed right from the beginning.
Yeah. And that's another part of kind of who I am. And then, a lot of the fun part, you know, I really view myself as a creator first and foremost. And I like just creating new things, whether it's music, video, businesses, you know, constitutions for organizations, you know, I mean, whatever it is, dissertations, thesis, you know, for me, it's all about a creative process. You know, it's all sort of part of the same body of work that I relate to again from childhood. When I was feeling the best was when I was creating something. And I got cassette tapes of me. I used to record myself like I was a radio host when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. I'm recording and I'm acting like I'm talking on the radio and performing live. You know, I had this little a little toy guitar and I'm playing and singing, kind of making things up off the top of my head, trying to improvise and sing. And I didn't know that that's what I was doing. I actually thought that that's how everybody made music. Like, I didn't know that people would learn things ahead of time. I thought that everybody sort of just used this telepathy to improvise everything on the spot. And so interestingly, you know, the direction of music I went into was where that does occur in the improvisation art form. But yeah, I always thought that, you know, some of my musical interests and an artistic interest from, you know, groups like Art Ensemble Chicago and Sun Ra. I mean, a lot of people don't know who those folks are, you know, if you check out Sun Ra, if you check out Art Ensemble Chicago, you look at some of the jazz music, the spiritual jazz music and movement that was happening in the late 60s and the 70s, it gets really clear where a lot of my influence comes from, because I was so immersed into that culture, you know, into that time period. And I just love the creativity of that time period. And so, yeah, with the colors and, you know, I basically taught myself, which is one of the best things that I probably ever did was when I taught myself how to video edit. And I did that when I was back in, when I was doing my first master's degree at College Conservatory of Music. I recorded my master's performance, thesis performance. We recorded it with my band. And then I spent just weeks and hours going to their studio and learning how to use that sort of the primitive version of Adobe Premiere. And it turned out really good, you know, and kind of professional. And I literally just sort of sat there and figured things out. And so now that's the closest thing that I think I have to a hobby is probably video editing, because I've never studied it formally. I don't really have an interest to study it formally. I like to envision what I want to see and then see if I can do it with the editing tools. And it's important to me to be expressive, to not hold back, you know, to have fun with the creativity, with what you're making, whether if it's, you know, some kind of imagery and videos and what you're wearing, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So what kind of mindset is needed to run your own business?
You need to have a mindset of might even depend on the business, but for me it just is a hardcore mindset of, you know, not giving up, somebody says, oh, you can't do that, or that's not, you know, you don't have that, you're a problem solver to the highest of levels. You're always thinking like, okay, this is what I kind of want to do, but how do you get it done? As opposed to, you know, because one of the things that I think is hard for some people, which I've learned to do over years and years, because I have always sort of been forward thinking, and I would tell people things that I thought would happen or some visions of things or stuff, then and I would get like ridiculed and people would just attack me. And I noticed that also when you start sometimes telling people about, you know, business plans and things like that, if you're talking to the wrong person, they will shut you down. And so I learned how to keep things to myself and only talk about them with the right people that were going to be supportive, that were going to be helpful, and to not necessarily just indiscriminately talk to a bunch of different people about things that haven't happened yet. You know, things that are still concepts. Because when I would first started talking about publishing my own books or even starting a business, there were some people that were even maybe kind of close to me that just didn't understand that at all. They're just like, well, you can't do that. Like, what are you talking about? You don't have a book deal. You don't have this. You're not, you know, you don't have, a degree in, you know, in that field. Like, what are you doing? And so I just, one of those people that learned how to just keep quiet, focus on the work. And then I kind of, you know, tell everybody about it later, you know, like all the people you would normally maybe want to talk about. And that was hard because there is that part where you get excited and you want to share with like you love, with your loved ones, people close. You're like, hey, check this out. This is so cool. And it's one of those just kind of unfortunate things where I had to learn that I have to sometimes keep that to myself until it's fully formed. Because you know, I want to protect it. You know, I don't want to, you know, when you start to share those kinds of things, if you're a little, you know, sometimes you can get sensitive about your creations and your ideas. And if you're not, you know, if it's not something that you're looking for criticism for yet, then, but somebody gives you a bunch of it, then it can sort of take the, you know, take the air out of your tires. And so, so that's been something that when I think about a unique kind of thing that I don't hear a ton of people talk about, but that's definitely something that's helped me was just to just do it and talk about it later when there was, you know, ideas like that.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Now, I wish I had heard that way back. And seriously, I mean, if you're listening to this at home, trust me, you're getting, that's a golden nugget right there. That and that alone, because the words of someone can really hold you back. If we hold on to what they're saying, you really have to have a thick skin in that kind of way. Or not say anything like Professor Spear, which I had to learn the hard way. So thank you for that. And mindset is everything. We have a motto here, find a way, whatever it is. And in those darkest days, like as we were building our business and my bank account was dipping lower and lower and I was really in a state of fear, the motto became find a way. Do you find that helpful?
Definitely. Definitely. That's it.
So if you could give yourself the young Professor Spira advice about starting your business, what would it be? If you can go back to the 5-year-old and or what, maybe 13, whatever, what advice would you give?
My advice would be to start, which is something that we've talked about, is to start thinking in terms of building systems. From your business, because that's what you're doing. And that's what I've always done, but I wasn't thinking about it like that. You know, I was, yeah. And so you can kind of, you can just feel like you're sort of just like, you're always reinventing the wheel all the time where it's like, okay, I know that I've heard other people say this, but I have this particular need that I haven't necessarily heard other people have. So, you know, then you create a way to a solution, which is and that solution is usually a system in some way, shape, or form.
Now, for those that aren't, you know, that are not in the, on that conversation, what is a system? For those like, what does he mean system?
So system is systems are everywhere. You know, one way that you can look at the world is through the filter of a system. So if you turn on a faucet in your house, how did you get that water? There's a system involved that got you that water. Or you turn on a light switch and the lights come on. There is a sophisticated system that's behind all that. With your body, the circulatory system, the digestive system. Within the context of a business, when you have something like, you know, okay, you have to deal with your taxes and you have to sort of deal with expenses and all that kind of stuff. You could either just sort of haphazardly put everything in a folder and then maybe at the end of the year, you try to go through it and write things down and be a mess, or you can systematize that process and you don't have that mess. You know, it's like things get done as they're supposed to get done. Or if you're creating something, as an art. And I think what I brought to this, as well as the Mucus's Diet Healing System, is this ability to think in terms of gradual systems that can work with other systems and ultimately lead to a, you know, just lead to an organism, you know, because an organism is basically a bunch of different systems put together working in tandem.
It was interesting when I brought you the idea and we talked about it. I didn't make that connection that you, it's the Mugleless Diet Healing System. I didn't even realize it was right there too.
Yeah, exactly. Cause I would talk about, I had just never really consciously thought about it that deeply within terms of setting up systems for my business, which again, it was something that I was already doing, but with that turn of attention and consciousness, all of a sudden I was able to start to really do it with intention and do it better than I was doing it before, you know, because you can improve, you know, the systems allow you to constantly refine because you evaluate a system that's in place and you say, okay, well, what, how can I improve this? You know, a good example of maybe a better example of a system that people would know about would say, if you do have a, if you could use an automation software to collect email addresses, you know, that's a system that you set up. You have a piece of software, but you have to set up how that data is coming in, where it's going, how it's being used. You know, that's all part of what you set up, you know, part of your system. And so when you start to look at your business as a series of systems, then it can start to really change your efficiency. So you're not doing everything by yourself.
Now we can do a whole show on systems. So I'm going to tell you, for you listening at home, the book that I had recommended to Professor Spira, which was Work the System. That was the first book that we talked about. And right, do you think that's a good place for those that want to go deeper on that?
Definitely. Yeah. Excellent book. Yeah. Excellent book, Matt. And you can, yeah, you find that right online. And yeah, great, great book. It was totally right on time and right on point. And the thing that's interesting with that too is, see, I would tell my younger self to be thinking about that, but I wouldn't, if I would have been thinking about that over this time, the efficiency, I would have been able to grow faster. My efficiency would have been better. But at the same time, there is a time and place for you to start sort of amping up things when it's time to grow. Cause you, in the beginning, you do a lot of stuff by yourself. If you're in business by yourself, or if you're in business with another person, you know, it's a couple people doing everything, but there's a certain point where if you're going to grow anymore, you're going to have to change some things and your systems have to get more efficient, get some more people involved. And so that was where I was at, where I'd kind of went, took things as far as I could take it the way I was doing it. So I had to be open, and that, that flexibility or a plasticity, to be able to move and change. That's another important attribute of great entrepreneurs, because you do have to constantly be vigilant, evaluating the market, evaluating new technologies. I mean, I'm learning about new softwares that I may or might use or may not use, you know, but I try to stay abreast of all that kind of stuff, you know, and that becomes part of the actual job, you know, as part of the work that you have to do.
And what's your advice for those just starting out? They want to lead their own, they want to fire start their own health revolution, they want to get their message out. What's your advice to those just starting out?
Is to get started, to just start recording. You know, everything doesn't have to be perfect. Which would probably be another thing I would tell myself when I was younger, but because I'm kind of a perfectionist with stuff, but you know, everything doesn't have to be perfect. It's better to put your ideas down and get them out. But I'm also a huge advocate of studying and researching. You really have to know your stuff. You have to take some time, because there are some people out here that try to become guru figures and promoters of a particular diet or something way before they've really mastered the information and the practice of it themselves. And in some cases, and you see this sometimes in younger folks and that kind of stuff, but they're it's like they are trying to promote something as a way for them to learn it themselves. They also get a little ego trip out of, you know, trying to, you know, getting a following and stuff. But my recommendation is to really focus on your studies. So if your area of expertise is, you know, whatever element, you know, if your area of expertise is massage therapy, and you're incorporating juicing into that, or some, or Mucus's diet or whatever, you know, you want to be able to really understand those fields that you're involved in on a deep level, not just the surface level, but where you really go deep with it. And then when you start to record yourself talking about these things and producing some promotional content and videos and that kind of stuff, or products, then you will really be poised to be able to make a dent and really help a lot of people.
Well, I stole this line from Bob Dylan, and I use it in my webinar when we teach people about this very topic, and it's know your song well before you start singing. You know, and that's the way. Professor Spira, what achievement are you most proud of?
Yeah. It's hard to say one thing. I can kind of say things in different fields. So in the academic field, I'm probably most proud of my bachelor's degree, and even though, you know, I went on to get two master's degrees and a PhD, that initial bachelor's degree sort of signifies the time period of transformation when I had gotten into the Mucus's diet and a lot of the hardships and the social isolation and the things that I was going through in that process. And even, you know, I was, you know, when I was in school, I was against the grain, as I was at College Conservatory of Music, and I just was not an average type of student. I was someone, I put a lot of pressure on my professors to think differently and to deal with me differently. You know, I was looking at them as, you know, I'm hiring them to teach me, as opposed to sort of the academic social structure is set up in such a way where, you know, the professors are on such high pedestals and the students, you're just supposed to go and keep your head down and just try to do good on your test and that kind of stuff. And I just came with a whole different energy, which sometimes made it challenging to persevere through that. So within the academic world, I would say that, that bachelor's degree means a lot to me. But just generally speaking, outside of that, if I had to pick just one thing, I would say my trombone, you know, my music making, and what I do in that realm, you know, I'm just real, proud of going down that path of not being scared away, saying, you know, there's no guarantee of making money trying to, you know, play jazz music, which is not, you know, not a popular music at all. And so some of the achievements that I've got over in that realm.
Yeah, and you showed those teachers who didn't pull you out of the class because you weren't good enough. And it reminded me of my own story, because I had the same situation and ended up with a master's degree. But back then, well, he's a buffoon, this guy. But yeah, you showed them, Professor Spira. What was the biggest transformation that happened along the way from launching the business, and something that maybe was unexpected? What was your biggest transformation? I know you said spiritual evolving that happened, but what was the biggest transformation?
So, with the diet, because that all, you know, yeah, it's all connected. So my biggest transformation definitely was when I started practicing the Mucus's diet, because I was way overweight, was almost 300 pounds, and had chronic migraine headaches every day, and allergies, had been on pharmaceutical medications, you know, kind of all of the story that we all tell about where we come from. And then once I got into the Mucus's diet healing system, you know, I lost a bunch of weight, got off all of those pharmaceutical medications, just totally transformed my existence. And so that was, even that in itself started to prepare me for what I would do with Mucus Free Life and being an entrepreneur later. Cause you know, one thing that's interesting to think about is how do you compare and contrast leadership versus entrepreneurship? And for me, cause you can have, there are some entrepreneurs that are not necessarily leaders, and it just depends on the kind of, you know, business, the kind of work they're doing. But then there's a lot of people that are great leaders, but they might not be able to run a business at all, you know? And so I've found though that when you can have both of those elements, being a leader as well as somebody with those business skills to be an entrepreneur, that's really going to help you in the long run. So I had a lot of leadership training where I had the opportunity to grow as a leader, especially in high school when I was in the Boy Scouts and some of the things that I did there. Then when I got into the Mucus's Diet, it was things that I had learned, which was one of the things I had learned about leadership, was you have to be prepared to be on an island sometimes where you're going to be alone, and you have to be comfortable with that, you know, comfortable not always being a part of the social kind of situation, or sometimes you're making decisions that might be that other people might not like. And so you have to be able to be strong with that. And so that helped me with some of the social challenges of just starting the Mucus's Diet back in, you know, 2002, when it was really, it was way before all of this vegan type, you know, the veganism stuff and of the past, you know, 10 years and, you know, 5-10 years and raw foodism and all that. Way before that got really put like this, like you had your podcast, it was starting to happen, but you couldn't walk into a store and see the word vegan anywhere yet. You know, it wasn't mainstream, it wasn't acceptable. And so as a leader, I was just like, well, look, I'm not going to change who I am to try and make other people comfortable or to try to fit into this little mainstream narrative. I'm going to be who I am. And if people like it, fine. If they don't, fine. You know, I just, and that's kind of this attitude, a certain type of kind of hardcore attitude. And that definitely helped me once I started really working with the business. Cause again, there's so many people, it's like when you start doing things that are interesting and really great, or if you have these aspirations, you know, haters are real. You know, it's like these folks come out the woodwork to try to tear you down. And so that those early experiences of that initial transformation really kind of gave me the strength that I needed when it was time to really put the pedal to the metal and grow the business.
Professor Spear right here on Juicy Preneur Radio. The website again, www.mucusfreelife.com. Is that the best way for us to follow you, Professor Spear?
Yeah, if you go to www.mucusfreelife.com, sign up for our Insider Club. You get the newsletter, and you know, just kind of keep in touch. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram. If you just type in Professor Spira, I should pop up on those different platforms. And so, whichever platform you like, the Instagram has been kind of blowing up a little bit, but and YouTube, and that's, I've been putting a lot more time into YouTube lately because I kind of got away from it for a while. And even though I have a pretty, you know, I mean, for me, it's a decent number of followers, but I really think I could grow that. And so I've been putting a lot more time over in that direction. So yeah, but you can find me all over, all over social media, and definitely mucusfreelife.com will direct you in all those different paths.
Awesome. Professor Spear, thank you so much for being here, the incredible work you're doing. And yeah, this interview was great. I knew it would be. So thank you again for your time and energy here. Steve Prusak, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for listening to Juicing Preneur Radio. Grab your free juicing chart at juicingchart.com and start building your health empire today.